going deep. I feel like Kalo on the Miami Heat. The words I speak off this sheet are like a three-peat. I don't just hop on a track, I bring running cleats. I'm a player for real, more than an athlete. Let my mama tell it, could have ran for the Senate. Instead I penned it for Donovan Bennett. I'm cemented, this a deep dive. In your headphones or a long drive. Up close and personal, just like you courtside. There ain't no out of bounds here, no offsides. We going live in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You are now tuned in to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
That's right, it is the Going Deep podcast, and it's a good one, but full disclosure, it is a somewhat incomplete one because we talked to Elliot Friedman, who I love to always talk to, but for context, so the conversation doesn't come off a bit odd, we talked to him before a couple things happened, both in the hockey world and in the world at large. Talked to him before there were terrorist attacks in the Middle East, and naturally, we mourn those losses and are sick with what we see in the news and on social media. Now, I am far from a geopolitical historian, but I do know that good friends and colleagues, whether it's Elliot Friedman or Shai Davidi or Jesse Rubinoff, people who have lent their time to help me as a fellow employee and as a host of this show, certainly have to be more than upset with what's going on back home. And I know at times, given the way our world is, that we see things as binary. You have to be on this side or that side, or you have to speak about this only and not speak about this, or you need to not say anything. And I just don't think that's certainly the way reality is. And so at the same time, as I feel for them, and I understand that an act of terrorism is exactly that, I do at the same time have empathy for our colleagues who are of Palestinian descent, who understand what colonialism looks like and feels like, and who understand what it is to essentially live in an open-air prison. I think the biggest thing I understand is that on days like this, at times like this, even though the existence of a racialized person in North America, in my case Canada, is not perfect or easy, I have walked out of my house fearing many things, having to run to a bomb shelter with my child in arm is not one of them. So that is what this weekend I was thankful for. I was not able to have any of that conversation with Elliot Friedman because my conversation with him happened before that news broke. It also happened before other news broke, and that is that the NHL is being even more restrictive than we first thought around moments of significance in NHL venues. And so another conversation that sparked off this past weekend was the fact that not only will we not have Pride jerseys in NHL arenas, we won't even have Pride tape. Find this thought experiment to be really difficult, that you want to draw that line because if someone said, hey, listen, my mother died of breast cancer, I want pink tape to raise awareness for that cause, have a hard time believing that anyone wants to say no, but yet we're at a place where we're saying no to this. Another conversation that Elliot, I know, would have some insight in, both in the way the league office operates, but how it's being received at all levels of the game, but we didn't have that conversation. We did have one on the growth of the game, and so that is what you're going to hear. Also on this episode, you're going to hear about hashtag reverse the ban, which is what PFLAG has done to take hold of this conversation about the LGBTQ2S plus community in hockey and what is or is not appropriate and what is and is not awareness. Someone who's been creating awareness on inclusion in hockey for people of any gender, race, religion, creed, sexual orientation is Megan Dugan. And she actually was in Toronto, so we had the pleasure to catch up with her. But first, we catch up with Elliot Friedman as I pick his brain on the things around this great game that make me curious. Let's go deep. So, Elliot, thank you for making the time right before what is an incredibly busy time for you. But naturally, so many people love the conversations that I have with you because I try to pull some stuff out of you that maybe others won't. Just I have a stream of consciousness and random questions that I want to ask. And actually,
sure.
Here's one, though, because I was recently at a dinner with a NHL player that doesn't necessarily need to be named. But I was talking to them about contracts. And told me a story about being layover in a hotel, and there's an NBA team, and they're all getting together having drinks and eating. And the hockey guys were aghast at, one, how much bad NBA players made, and two, how unhappy they all were with what they made. And they were making compound interest on top of what any NHL player would hope to make. And the leagues are somewhat similar in terms of time and where they play and time of year, but the money is drastically different.
Mm-hmm.
How much of that is just the business? How much of that is the mentality of the individual players and the shame that you get as an NHL player if you move the number up too high? How did it get to a place where they're not even really in the same ballpark?
Well, this is a very timely question, and there's a lot of different ways I could go here. And the reason it's a timely question is because I do think that this conversation is starting to happen a little more. I did an interview last week with Luke Robitaille, the president of the Kings, and they were in Australia, and we were talking about the NHL business. Since Robitaille retired as a Hall of Fame player, he's become a business exec, and he's learned a lot. Like, I think Luke Robitaille is a real success story in transferring your career from a player to the business side. And we were talking about that. And one thing I'm starting to hear a lot more of is, and I don't know if worry is the right word, Donovan, but it's definitely there, is especially now with Messi here, will MLS pass the NHL? And, you know, the MLS franchise values are starting to go up. There's some of them in the $500 million range. NHL teams are more valuable than that, but there's no question that the gap is closed. And I think players have noticed that. And, I think there's a lot of talk around the league about we need to get ourselves in gear and get going again. Now, when it comes to salaries, it's not exactly apples to apples. You know, for one thing, NHL rosters are larger. They also have, also the idea of minor league teams, like the NBA having a D-League team or a G-League team, I'm sorry, I don't remember whatever it's called now, that's a relatively new phenomenon. NHL teams have been doing that for a long time. But there's no question that the growth in basketball, especially internationally, has really drawn their numbers up. The other thing too, and Donovan, this is the most interesting thing about it to me, and that is that, like, there are some agencies in hockey that are only hockey agencies, and there are some agencies in hockey like Wasserman, like CAA, like Octagon, where they represent multiple sports. And what those agents tell me is that the people they speak to in their own organization who represent players who play baseball or basketball, the mentality is much different when it comes to going for top salary. Like Connor McDavid, when he did his last deal, the maximum you can get out of the salary cap in the NHL is 20%. And one of the first things that came up was McDavid wasn't going to ask for 20%. And the Oilers were like, thank God, but we would have given it to him. And initially, McDavid had agreed to a salary, I think it was $13.33 million a year. And it got out, and then there was a bit of backlash about, well, that's too much. And McDavid, to help the Oilers win, he put it down to $12.5 million. Like, as far as I'm concerned, Connor McDavid's underpaid. He deserves to make whatever somebody's willing to pay him. but he cut it down to 12-5. And an agent, and it wasn't McDavid's agent, but another agent told me that when their basketball agents, I think it was, heard it, they were like, oh my God, like that's not the way it is in the NBA. And in the NBA, the star players say, hey, I'm worth this. And if the team can't make it work, that's their problem. That's their problem. So I've heard this, I said, that's really interesting. And I started asking this to other agents who kind of worked in these multi-sport conglomerates, and they all said that's true. Like the mentality of the top players in terms of what share of the pie they get is very different. So that's why I think Matthews, like you look at his salary, you say, compared to a basketball player or a football player or a baseball player, it's not that much, but he did move the line. And so one of the things I think Donovan, it's absolutely the mentality of the player to grab a greater share is higher in other sports than it is in hockey. And I wonder if and when that'll change now that like McKinnon and then Matthews have moved the line a bit. But the other thing too is you have to look at the way the salary caps are structured. You know, the NFL, you can't compare it to the NFL. They're the king. Their caps are higher. But in the NBA, there are exceptions. You can go over the cap in certain situations. In the NHL, you can't. It's a hard cap. There are no exceptions. You can fluff it a bit with LTIR, but generally there's no exceptions. And that's another reason you can do things in the NBA that you can't do in the NHL.
Well, the interesting thing is an NBA player would not just say, that's your problem, figure it out. They would say, not only do I want what I deserve, if you can't build a winner around me, then I'll leave. Then I'm going elsewhere. Do you sense any aspect of that trickling into the culture in the NHL? I mean, are friends listening in Calgary certainly feel a little sore about this, but do you sense mentalities changing on that front?
Like in terms of, it's going to change here? Like that's, or in terms of like super teams kind of thing?
Well, player empowerment in terms of using their leverage to get where they want to be or to play with whom they want. Do you see that transferring?
Well, Donovan, it has happened at times before. We have seen that. There have been times players have flexed their muscle. Like there have been trade demands. Like in the NBA, for example, if you make a trade demand, you get fined. I remember Anthony Davis was fined when he was playing for New Orleans, and it came out he wanted to be traded. I think he got fined like $50,000. I think James Harden, who's like an all-timer when it comes to this stuff, he got fined recently when he came out and said, he called Daryl Morey a liar and said, I want to be out of here. The NHL doesn't have that. So like there have been times I've reported trade requests, other people have reported trade requests. So that's one way to do it. You know, a few years ago, Ryan Suter and Zach Parise wanted to play together on the Wild, and they found a way to make it work, and the Wild paid them both to play there. It didn't turn out as well as everybody hoped, but at the time it was very exciting for them. So there have been moments of it. There's no question. I think the other thing here too now is that we're all wondering if we are headed into a bit of a different space, Donovan. Like the whole thing with Mike Babcock here, that was players pushing behind the scenes to have Babcock removed. Like there's no question that was a player-driven usurping. And the other thing too is just after that, you know, Steven Stamkos, who's a really quiet guy, like almost never any controversy around him, came out and said unprompted, basically, that he was really upset about the lack of contract talks for him. And I was talking to another executive who said to me that he doesn't think it's a coincidence that Stamkos did that just right after the whole Babcock thing. And we are wondering, like, if we are going into another level. Like, hockey has always prided itself on being the greatest team sport. You know, people can argue if it is or isn't. I'm not really into that. Please like my sport stuff. But the one thing I really do believe, Donovan, is that, like, in the NBA, a star player is playing, especially in the playoffs, for 40 or 48 minutes. In the NFL, the quarterback determines so much of the success you have. You know, baseball is a little bit different, but your star players, unless you're a DH, they're on the field all the time or in play all the time. In hockey, the best forward, the best scorers, what do they play? 25 of 60 minutes? That's 30, or even your best defenseman might play 30, and there's some great defensemen in this league. But hockey is the only sport where your best players aren't guaranteed to play half the time. And I think that hockey has always pushed that, and that's always kind of been why it's that team feeling. The teams that win the Stanley Cups in the NHL, Donovan, they have great stars, but they also have great depth. If you ask the Vegas Golden Knights last year, why did they beat Edmonton in the second round on the way to the Stanley Cup? They said, we were deeper than they were. And the Oilers, on some level, have admitted that too. So I think that because, you know, it takes that kind of your depth, I think, has to be better in the NHL than it is probably in any other sport. So for that reason, I think it changes the mentality. But I always wonder if it's going to be different. Like, Donovan, I've been watching this Deion Sanders stuff. I think it's incredible. I know everybody's going after him now, and they lost the other week to Oregon. But I think it's awesome. And I'm watching these videos that Deion's putting out, and then the Oregon coach is putting out, and the one that, of their talk, and then the one of their post game where they played all the taunts the Colorado players were giving them. We need this stuff. Like, this has to start happening in the NHL, and that's the way we're going, and I think we have to go there.
I'm not going to hold my breath. I agree. I just think the change happens at a slow pace. But here, actually, I think that where the trickle-down effect might be, because I think this is a masterclass in marketing, and with that comes dollars. But on that finance note, if we were trying to raise a super athlete in Canada, you know, doing our, you know, Todd Marinovich or, you know, Ball family version in Canada, we had this Canadian athlete, we'd give him a basketball or a tennis racket or a soccer ball. We wouldn't give him a hockey stick if we wanted him to make incredible amount of money, both professionally, but also from the corporate sector. If we look at the top earners in terms of Canadian athletes, this is, I think, probably the only era in my life where they're not hockey players. Do you see, if we're looking at the pipeline, this could be somewhat of a existential crisis if the culture doesn't change the way you're describing?
Well, I think that is a problem. I agree. I think the biggest difference now, Donovan, is that in the past, it wasn't always guaranteed you would have success in those other sports. But now, you know, you're looking at Alphonso Davies and, you know, the Canadian soccer men making the World Cup. You know, the Canadian women winning a gold medal last time around. You know, you're looking at some of the success we've had in tennis from Andreescu on. You know, like basketball, the Raptors winning the NBA title. And the success of the Canadian players recently winning, you know, the gold medal at the World Cup for the first time ever. And, you know, when people see how, you know, guys like Shea and Dylan Brooks played, you know, you're going to get people seeing that success on the international level who are going to say, I want to do that. And I think that's the difference for me, is not that you can make more money in other sports, Donovan, but now I think Canadian kids are going to start to see that, well, it used to be in Canada you couldn't, because we didn't have the ability, the infrastructure to be as successful in those other sports. Those were outliers in years past. They weren't consistent. We were only consistent in hockey. Well, now you see you can be consistent in other things. And when I see that, I see that, I think, is probably the biggest challenge to hockey and earning potential and things like that, is that now you see sustained success or more consistent success in other sports than just that one.
You're a lover of sport and lover of the country. I know you followed the ride that the Canadian men's basketball team took us on, and both of our soccer teams have taken us on in recent years, which brings the question of best on best, because these athletes in these circles, if I'm Connor McDavid, I'm Mitch Marner, and I'm, you know, rubbing elbows with RJ Barrett and with Alphonso Davies, I am so livid that in my prime athletic years, I don't have any international best on best. Is there any hope that that will be rectified in a real way?
Yes, I think it will. I think that, like, the NHL can't be blind to what's happening around it, to the rise of MLS and, you know, even F1. You know, there's a big race now in Vegas, and you can't have your head in the sand. And I on some level I disagree with the NHL stance on the Olympics, but on some level, as a businessman, I understand it. You know, they don't. You know, the IOC. You know, anyone who's dealt with the IOC knows what kind of organization they are. They're getting a lot of the wins from this, if not all of them. And I understand, as a business person, why the NHL hates that. But you have to go. It's the Olympics. And, you know, one of the things I've heard, and a couple of Swedish players have agreed with me on this, they think the lack of best on best has really hurt the sport in Europe, because that's what people want to watch. Yeah, they like the Stanley Cup. But if you're a Swedish hockey fan, you also want to see your best players in the Olympics. Like, I mean, you really do. And I think the NHL and the players have been all over this. They've been all over this for a long time. You know, I'll tell you, once I had one case where, you know, a guy was supposed to do an interview with me about international hockey, and he didn't want to do it because I was going to talk to him about one of his clients, and he didn't want to speak for his client. And he told his client about this, and the guy said, talk, because we got to have this. And so I think the players want it really badly. I do think we're going to see it. You know, the thing is, like, the really tricky thing is that, you know, I don't know if there's another sport. People can argue this with me. It's fine. I don't know if there's another sport that depends more on Russian participation at these big events than hockey does. And that's, like, I'll tell you, Donovan, my trip to Sweden this year in August, you know, there's a lot of people in North America have strong opinions about it, but it's nothing like the people who live over there, who basically see it right on their doorstep. And that's obviously a thing that it's hard for the NHL to navigate, harder, I would say, but we have to have this. We have, like, whether Russia's involved or not, and right now I would think the answer would be no, we have to have this. We need best on best. And I think we're going to have it starting in February 2025 in a mid-season tournament, and we have to go back to the Olympics. As far as I'm concerned, whatever the negatives you feel you may have, that you don't make enough money on the Olympics or whatever, or they're impossible to deal with, fine, I get it. But you have to be there. You have to have this on your biggest stage.
You mentioned that the league, the sport, can't have their head in the sand, have to understand what's going on in the world around them. I present to you two names, one of which you mentioned earlier, Mike Babcock and Bill Peters.
Yeah. Yep.
To me, from the outside looking in, understanding, I suppose, how people react to things, a coach would have to be so appreciably better than any other alternative for me to be willing to even entertain, one, the PR hit, the distraction, which people in sports claim they're so afraid of, but two, the real-life chance of some potential actual issues based off the track record. One, I guess I assume that that's not part of the calculus? Like, your thought is there won't be pushback, or you just don't care? How did, in your estimation, that those choices get made? Or is there part of the equation or the culture that I'm missing?
You know, the Bill Peters one, you know, I have to say this too, Donovan. There's an investigation going on right now in the Western Hockey League where, look, we have to let the investigation play out, but I don't like what I'm hearing. And, like, I get really frustrated and angry when I hear these things. Like, Donovan, like, I've been around sports all my life. I wasn't an elite-level athlete like you were. I wasn't good enough to play them at a high level like you were, but I've learned a lot of great lessons around sports, and lessons for life. And especially since I've been primarily doing hockey for the last 20 years, I've learned a lot of great lessons about life and what makes a person successful and why some people aren't so successful. And I think the vast majority of people in hockey are really good people. But we do dumb things sometimes. I don't know if we want to say that we give people a second chance. I don't know if we are too focused on winning. I don't know. I mean, there's lots of different answers here. But, you know, when things like this happen, we really shoot ourselves in the foot. And, you know, the Bill Peters thing, you know, Donovan, I want to believe that people can reform and learn their lessons and get better. But when I hear that you don't reach out to the person until the last minute, you know, like, what are you going to do? I mean, like, you can't do that. I understand Hakeem Olu's reaction in that point. Like, that's the person you have to convince because it's the person that happened to. And I was really, like, it bothered me when I heard that. And, you know, the whole Babcock thing, again, like, I think with Columbus, it's a win-or-else year for them. They're under pressure. It didn't go well under their last coach. They felt that the players had too much control and the coach didn't have control. They, you know, Babcock is – just forget what he did personally here for a second. He's a good coach. He's as prepared as anybody. Even his biggest detractors will tell you that. But, you know, he blew it. Like, it's that simple. And the one thing here is it's very clear, Donovan, that there are people who really don't like Babcock. And they were looking for a reason. And he gave them one. And it's his fault. Like, it just is. And like I said, Donovan, I get really frustrated with these stories. I really do because, like, you know, one of the things I really don't like about my job, and it's, you know, hey, like, this is life in the big city. But sometimes, like, I get put in a position where I have to explain these things or make it sound like I'm defending why things happen. And I really thought about this over the last little while, and I think I just have to stop doing that, like, and just not put myself in a position where I do that. But what really pains me about it is I've learned so much from this sport about life, about what makes you successful and what doesn't, and I'm very, very grateful for that. But we can't do this to ourselves. Sometimes we are our own worst enemies. And these are cases where I think you have to just say, look, like, this is on us. You know, as our sport, we're hurting ourselves when these things happen.
Lastly, Babcock, Hall of Fame. Will he be? Should he be?
I obviously right now, no, like, the same thing is, like, based, like, the same conversation is going around Joel Quenneville too. You know, Joel Quenneville won 3 Stanley Cups as a head coach. You know, the people ask the same question. Should he be in the Hall of Fame? I think, first of all, I think in the short term, the answer is no. I don't know, like Donovan, I always believe, and I know a lot of Niners don't like this answer, I want to believe in a world where you can be honest and make amends. Like, somehow you can come forward and say, this is what I did wrong, and this is how I'm going to make up for it. But I think both of them have to do that publicly and get backing from others to say, yes, this happened, before that can be considered.
Thanks so much to Elliot, whose time is so invaluable, so I appreciate that. He spent some of it with me to the benefit of you. If you are listening to this, you definitely are already listening to his podcast, 32 Thoughts. It's outstanding. And you're following him on social. But low-key, he's really good on both X, almost said Twitter, and Instagram. Handles the same either place, at FreejHN. I see. And I always love talking big picture with him in terms of not just where the game is or where it's been, but where it's going. Someone who's taking the game to new heights is Megan Dugan, who is the director of player development for the New Jersey Devils. You remember her from her playing days, as she was a gold medalist in the 2018 Olympics as the United States beat our Canadian women's national team. Now she's making the game great all over North America, but she was in Canada recently to talk to some students at Humber. After the break, we catch up with her on Going Deep.
My name is Lucille Bryan.
I'm Clifton Bryan.
My grandson is a show.
And I'm so happy that you're listening to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
I'm so glad that he had a show. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Grandma and Granddad. And as I mentioned before the break, Megan Dugan was here in Canada. She's actually at a leadership camp, which is an annual event for first semester students at Humber College here in Toronto, Canada. She's talking to the kids about, you know, skill building activities and reflecting and leadership. All things that, quite frankly, I'm 40 and I'm still trying to figure out and learn. So wanted to spend a little bit of time with her, since it's so rare that she has the time to come up north, to figure out, one, how did she become such a powerful figure in the game of hockey? What does she love in terms of the way the game of hockey is slowly but surely changing? And what changes does she still need to see and hope to be a part of? Megan Dugan on Going Deep. So, Megan, love that we got you up north, and love why you're here. At Humber, part of the leadership camp, someone who's talking to the kids about being a leader in their space and beyond. One, why are you here? You could be doing so many things right now, especially on the eve of another NHL season and everything that's going on in the women's game professionally now. What called you to come up here and talk to the students?
Great timing, actually. Well, one of my colleagues, a consultant that we hired to work for New Jersey on some mental performance stuff, is actually he's a professor at Humber. So made a great connection there. And this is something that he asked me if I'd be open to doing, and headed out to Humber and address that group there this morning, which certainly, you know, was happy to do. So it was a great morning. Students were really engaged, and we had a wonderful kind of hour-long discussion where probably wasn't enough time, to be honest. I think a lot of the students, wanted to ask more questions, but they had a full day ahead of them, and I did as well. So I'm sure there'll be some follow-ups, as it was a really robust discussion, and I was happy to be a part of it.
Well, I know for a fact you were much more attentive at U of Wisconsin than I was at Western University, but I remember being in those talks and, you know, trying to pick up 1, 2, 3 takeaways. For the talk you led, let's expand it now. What's the one thing you wanted to have those students leave with?
Oh, man, we covered a lot of different topics, but mainly, you know, a lot of it centered around leadership and my journey and just kind of the ups and downs of, goal setting for yourself and things you want to achieve and facing adversity and kind of how to not only lead, you know, whether it's a group you're working through, working on through challenges, but, you know, lead yourself through challenges. So touched on a lot of that. And then quite frankly, like we talked pretty candidly just about people and relationships in life and how important they are, regardless of industry that you're in, right? You know, the seats that they were sitting in today, and where they want to go with their careers and what they're trying to do and network and figure out, you know, what path they're going to take, you know, versus being a part of a team and, you know, working on different things and collaborating with different people, regardless of anywhere that any of us are in our journey, the importance of kind of people and the relationships that we build and form and keep, I think is critical. And that's one of the key takeaways that I gave them. You know, whether it's from a leadership perspective or just, you know, aspirational, just talk to them about the importance of people in their life.
Given your various roles and experience, you find yourself leading in different areas, whether it's obviously, you know, as a player with a C on your sweater, now player development with the Devils, with Women's Sports Foundation, and certainly in talks like this, and then, you know, working back channels, certainly helping that the women's game get to where it is right now, and then being a leader in terms of talking about LGBTQ2+ advocacy. All that type of leadership, is there constants between it? Are there amendments and changes you have to make given the different areas and different people that you were trying to lead at different times?
You know, I think it all comes ultimately from the same place. I mean, as a young kid, I always was someone that was passionate and outspoken and, you know, thrusted into leadership roles from a young age, whether that was just captains of sports teams and things like that. And, you know, president of a class. I think because I was outspoken and passionate, I got thrusted into that. But through my experience kind of in my hockey career, you know, and then now into my like professional and adult life, you know, it's a lot of the same common themes. It's kind of just the purpose and the mission. You know, I'm a very passionate person. I believe strongly in a lot of things, obviously a lot of the things you just mentioned, right? Like I believe very strongly in my, my career in hockey. I believe very strongly in my family and how I identify and my rights. I believe very strongly in women's equity and, especially when it comes to sports and sports business. And so it's easy to take a stand and be a leader when you're passionate about something. And, you know, that's what a lot of those areas that you mentioned in my life are, you know, those are passion points for me. And so I want to continue to be a leader and, you know, push all of those groups forward.
We certainly have seen a group of female coaches being pushed forward. Every time I look up this preseason, I see, you know, another woman who's done quite a bit in the game behind a bench in an NHL arena. And it's not that long ago where that would have been an odd sight. What do you attribute to the change that we are seeing, and where can we still see some improvement?
Yeah, super exciting, obviously. Big news like last week with, you know, Jess Campbell and Corey Chevry behind the benches of different, you know, NHL clubs and preseason games. And that's just the beginning, you know, and I'm so excited for those women to be some of the first and can't wait until, you know, it becomes the first in a real, you know, in-season game. I think that's probably the next step. And so I think it's just, you know, I think it's in openness. I think it's, you know, a demand in a lot of organizations for out of the box thinking and, you know, diversity of thought and diversity of background. And then, you know, once taking that plunge, the organizations that are taking this plunge and hiring women and bringing in, you know, diverse candidates to do jobs that, you know, traditionally white men have done, they're starting to see like, wow, like we're having greater success, right? Like it's not only, you know, the right thing to do to diversify your leadership and your staff, but it's good business. And I think that that's what people are seeing. You know, we're winning with these different types of people from different backgrounds and, you know, genders and races coming into our sport. You know, we saw that you know, in part with Jess Campbell almost winning a Calder Cup last year as a coach, you know, with Coachella. So it's, you know, it's a winning proposition, I think. I'm certainly biased, but to bring in, you know, a variety of different people who see things differently to work on, you know, leading your group to success. And I think we're starting to see that more, and it increases the appetite for it. So excited to continue to see women, you know, keep kind of breaking barriers, especially in the NHL. And we certainly have a long way to go, but have made some really big steps lately.
For a long time, I continued to hear in terms of minority candidates behind a bench or female candidates behind a bench, well, there's just not enough in the pipeline. And I'm not really sure if that was true or if it was just a ready-made excuse. Now, one of the benefits of the PWHL is that pipeline gets a little bit bigger, more opportunities for growth, more jobs, quite frankly, in the marketplace. To see the league start the way it has, to see the level that it's been talked about, covered, broadcasted, and really inspired people, you know, via the draft. What has that been like for you, knowing when the sport wasn't like that on the female side?
Yeah, so exciting. Such a huge step. And, you know, kudos to everyone that's been involved and been grinding along the way. There's a lot of women over the last, you know, 20 plus years who have wanted, you know, a day like this to come. And I know Jaina Hefford's been someone really at the forefront of it, and has done such a good job leading that group to kind of what we're seeing right now. And, you know, watching the success of the draft a couple weeks ago now, and was just really, really exciting and done in a professional manner, and such a special day for those women that were drafted. So can't wait for the start of the season, obviously, in January. I look forward to bringing my kids, you know, to many games and supporting that league in a variety of capacities. And it's just, again, it's just the beginning. You know, I think this is the first year of something that long term is going to be really great, and excited to see where it goes.
You've been working on this type of stuff with a lot of people, with the Women's Sports Foundation, for quite some time. Sometimes when we have this conversation, people feel like it's philanthropy, like, oh, we should do this because, you know, it would make, you know, women in sport feel good. Talk to us about the business case. What are the opportunities to invest in women's sport?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's a winning proposition. I think, you know, women, especially in the sports landscape, you look across, you know, you look at soccer, you look at basketball, you look at some of the expansion opportunities, you look at this new women's pro hockey league starting up, just to name a few. I mean, these are legitimate businesses that people want to be a part of, that they want to support, you know, that they want to be recognized as, you know, being in connection with. And it's amazing to see that not only are women being given a platform and a place to start, you know, playing and competing, but, you know, that it's putting butts in the seats, and it's making money and being, you know, promoted on TV. And again, still a long way to go, but really trending in the right direction.
That could be said as well about your franchise, the New Jersey Devils, and it's certainly a young group, which makes your role in development that much more key. Seemed like a couple years ago, the wave was statistics and analytics, and everyone was investing in that space. Now I feel like an area where you can really separate yourself is finding advantages in development and the mental health side of helping players. What has your journey been around finding avenues, support, resources to essentially help your players get better?
Yeah, I mean, the way I look at it is, you know, you just leave no stone unturned. Like, nothing falls through the cracks. Like, my mission in kind of leading our group and on the development side is we need to know our prospects inside and out, on and off the ice, you know, from a technical, tactical, you know, analytical, statistical perspective, off the ice, from a sports science perspective. And then, as you mentioned it, like, mental health and performance and professionalism and mentorship and these things that these young guys, need, and, you know, will be help them be successful in their pro careers. So, you know, we love obviously working with our young players, and it's always exciting to watch them succeed. And but ultimately, you know, as I said at the beginning, like the importance of people in your life and building strong relationships and being great mentors for these young players, and is a big purpose of what we do too.
You're now dealing with players who are growing up in a reality that is entirely different than the one that we grew up in. They've always been mm-hmm. in a reality with social media and with cell phones. And the hockey world can change slowly. Are there things that you have to do differently, approaches you have to change, because the asset, the player, is appreciably different than some of the older players that are in dressing rooms right now?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, every year, like in all of our lives, like something's new with the way that we communicate, right? And so I think just kind of being able to evolve and be flexible with that, understanding that, you know, every player takes in information differently, every player communicates differently. And so just making sure that, again, to what I said earlier, like we know them inside and out. We understand how they learn, how they process, how they best communicate, which helps us interact with them on a daily basis. So whether it's, you know, technology or whether it's in person or, you know, everyone's needs are a little bit different. And so understanding those and then being able to act on it is definitely a big part.
Thank you so much to Megan for spending the time. You can follow her online on Twitter and Instagram, both same handle as well. mdugan10 is how you follow her. And also go to womenssportsfoundation.org, where you can keep up with everything that her foundation is doing to make sure that they unlock possibilities for women in sport, a conversation we obviously always want to have right here on Going Deep. So thank you for playing your part and listening to it. Sports can be a force multiplier, certainly, for change. We've seen that, both pro and sometimes con. And that pendulum has swung back and forth in terms of the DEI initiatives within the game of hockey, specifically the NHL. And as you know, we've talked about this quite a bit on this podcast. The fact that the NHL arenas, the games that we love, started to become used to co-opt conversations about inclusion and diversity was highly disappointing. Now, unfortunately, that brought us to a place where, in June, during Pride Month, while people were celebrating, it was discovered that the NHL has decided to move away from cause-related jerseys. Well, there's a group who feels like that is the exact wrong response to the situation. Actually, what we need is more conversation and more cause-related jerseys. And that's where team pride comes from. I don't know if you saw this, but you definitely need to hear about it. PFLAG Canada, which is a nonprofit that supports education and advocacy for the 2S LGBTQ plus community, revealed what they're calling hashtag reverse the ban, a team pride hockey jersey. What it is, it's stitched uniforms from teams across the NHL together in what looks like a little bit of a rainbow. The jersey is fire. But what it does is symbolize inclusivity. They're hoping the campaign will rally the public to support 2S LGBTQ plus community and athletes, and eventually, hopefully, reverse the cause-related jersey ban. And that's not just related to pride jerseys, although that was the most divisive topic, but all themed jerseys are going away moving forward in the NHL. PFLAG Canada is hoping to start the conversation back up and reverse where we've gotten to because of the negative conversation. So I figured, why not go directly to the source and find out how the idea for the campaign came to be. Why do they feel like this is the appropriate and needed response? And what are the tangible goals in terms of not only having this reverse the ban jersey out there, but with the reverse the ban initiative as a whole and getting leagues like the NHL on board to have celebratory nights and celebratory symbols like a specific jersey with a specific cause. So let's listen to and learn from Donnie Potts, the president of PFLAG Canada, as we go deep on Reverse the Ban. So Donnie, thank you so much for joining. Above and beyond the question that is on everyone's minds, and that is, how can I get my hands on a Reverse the Ban jersey? Because I want one, whether it's to showcase in your display at home or to wear to an NHL arena. I want to go back even further. And I want to hear from you, when you heard that the NHL was reversing course and deciding to go away from not just pride jerseys, but themed jerseys overall, your immediate thoughts were what?
I was gut punched. It was like, are you kidding me? You're reversing everything that everybody's done to make awareness out there back 20 years. And the biggest thing was, he did it, Bateman did it in the middle of Pride Month. So it was even more of a direct punch, because it's like, you're doing it against our community because you're afraid of the backlash.
So for someone who's on the other end of the conversation, the devil's advocate would be, the jersey is a piece of fabric. We are celebrating people in community, in arena, spending lots of money, raising lots of awareness. But sadly, a few players choosing not to wear a piece of fabric has overwritten all of that. So we're going to remove that distraction. When you hear that explanation, your response is what? Is there any credence to it?
In my opinion, I don't accept it, because you are a role model. You've signed to do this job. You've put yourself out there to be a role model for young kids. And those kids could be part of the 2SLGBTQA+ community. And you're just telling them, by not accepting to wear this or making a statement that it goes against what you believe, is telling them that they don't matter. And that's unacceptable. Like, you are a role model. I'm a role model. Donovan, you're a role model. We're all role models. We have to lead by example. And like, just on this topic, going back even 10 years, there was a handful of players that would wear a pride jersey. And now there's a handful of players that won't. We've made all of this progress, and we've made such a great impact in such a homophobic sport. Like, I grew up in the rinks. My uncles coached. We played. Like, I can't remember a weekend where I wasn't freezing my toes off at the ice rink. But here we are. You know, I'm a lot older, and now we're going back, rolling everything back. And, you know, and it's not just our jersey. It's like, okay, what about the indigenous knights and jerseys that they create? Like, we're supposed to be moving forward, and Bateman is taking us backwards.
Yeah, I totally understand that. And so the response to, you know, Gary Bettman and the NHL's decision is, well, in fact, we're going to make a jersey. Take me through the thought process and the execution of coming up with the initiative to formulate a Reverse the Ban jersey.
So we were approached with the concept, and it was amazing. It was an amazing idea to take a piece of every jersey in the league and create this one inclusive jersey. Sadly, there's only one. I'd love to get my hands on it and take it home, because it's amazing that there's a piece of every team in the NHL in this jersey. So when it was approached, it was put out, it was put on display in front of the Hockey Hall of Fame, and people were like amazed by it. Like, it's just been a positive thing. And
Can we work together to get the jersey?
I would love to. I would love to. The importance of not just having the Knights and, you know, having the jerseys on players in arena, you know, for members of the community, in your estimation, what is the importance of seeing the physical symbol?
The symbolism is that you can be seen and you can be heard and you're welcome and we hear you and we want you to be part of the greater community. And it's the same as the flag. It's a symbol to show that this is a safer space and you're welcome here. Like, we're here for you. And, like, it's just, like, it's such a vital tool and such a simple tool that the NHL could use and has used that has brought awareness and has brought community out to support this.
And what are you hoping moving forward? The tangible goals of this initiative are, these conversations are, what does success look like in your mind?
Them bringing back the jerseys and all of the jerseys and, like, stepping back up and being a leader. Like, Gary's rolled back so much work that teams have done. Like, I live in Toronto. Well, I live outside of Toronto, and Toronto's my team. And I have watched them grow and the work that they've done here and across Canada, because hockey is our sport. And, like, it's just, we've moved so forward, and there's so much hate and rhetoric out there now that this just added fuel to it. It gave the haters extra fuel. Look, we succeeded in this. It's the same as when they did the Bud Light can and boycotted it. Like, Bateman is just afraid that he's going to get backlash like that. Instead of being the strong-willed, no, we're going to continue this and support it like other professional organizations, he's backed out.
And lastly, I would be remiss, because you've mentioned all the work that has been done by various groups, not to spotlight the work that PFLAG Canada has done and is doing. And, you know, for our listeners, it's a national charitable organization founded by parents who wish to help themselves and their family members understand and accept their 2S LGBTQ plus children. So, you know, what does that work look like on a day-to-day, you know, 365 day a year, you know, scope? And what can allies do to help with that work?
Well, we have over 60 chapters and contacts across the country. And we deal with everything on a daily basis. Like, right now, we're dealing with Saskatchewan rolling back stuff and trying to change the rules that, you know, if you're 16 or under, we have to inform your parents. Like, they're creating more harm. And so our chapters are on the front lines combating that, being there for these youth and community members that need the support, because we are Canada's largest charity that offers peer-to-peer support, education, and awareness, and it's growing. Like, we are so busy right now, it's sad that in 2023 we have to be this busy because of all of the hate that's festering and coming out. And it's just, like, nonstop, man. Like, as the president of this organization, I am inundated with chapters saying, hey, we need help. What do we do? Where are we going to go with this?
Thanks so much to Donnie Potts. Now, naturally, I would have asked him specifically about Pride Tape, which was in a memo that came out to clarify the NHL's stance on nights of significance in arena and what can and cannot take place, but the overarching message still stands. So we'll see where this conversation goes, because I suspect this is not the last of it. Certainly won't be the last of it in this space. Thank you so much for listening. We covered a lot of ground on this episode, but it is one certainly I'm very proud of. Hopefully you feel the same. If so, feel free to like, favorite, share, and subscribe. 5 stars, even leave a review. We love feedback, critical or otherwise. We'll talk to you again soon. Take care.